Tech of Sports, episode 51, Talking Tennis with Marty Collins and Lisa Stone. This week on the Tech of Sports, Marty Collins and Lisa Stone. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. And don't forget Stitcher and the Stitcher Radio app for all iOS devices, Android, and BlackBerry. Get Stitcher for free with all your favorite Netcast shows preloaded. Stitcher Radio, it's an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher, it's smart radio for your smartphone. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. Join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live. Where you can join the chat room and listen and watch the show live. I'd like to welcome everyone tonight for a little talk about tennis as Wimbledon is underway the first week. And a couple people always have some good thoughts and opinions on everything tennis, and we're joined by making a return visit, Marty Collins, tennis parent, enthusiast, and advocate, lives in the USTA Northern California section, and Lisa Stone of the Parenting Aces blog, residing in the USTA Southern section. So great to have both you guys on.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
And guy and lady, sorry about that. I guess we'll open it up here and talk about, we'll go start with Marty first here since he's a returning guest, and just give a few sentences, Marty, on week one or first couple days of Wimbledon. Or you look like you're a little frazzled.
Well, today was a frazzling day with all the injuries and the withdrawal, so I guess that's the theme that we're mostly going with. I look forward to Wimbledon every year. I think it's the best tennis tournament in the world, so whatever happens, it's always very interesting for me, and I'm very into it at this point. And I'm also very into the fact that the coverage is live on YouTube. That's helping quite a bit for myself. I appreciate it.
I think so too. And ESPN covering, I think, about 9 or 10 courts constantly too. So that's nice. And Lisa, I know you're watching, and I'm sure you were surprised today a little bit too.
Yeah, terribly surprised. I mean, it's exciting for the up-and-comers that are now going to have a chance to go deeper into the tournament. And, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion who the champion's going to be anymore. I think Djokovic and Murray are probably getting a little bit nervous watching their compatriots fall today.
They probably are. It was maybe a wake-up call to them, though. But it also maybe is a wake-up call to some of the other players now that they see that members of the top four and players seated ahead of them can be beat, and they're going down in droves this week. So I know local Atlanta product Bobby Reynolds here is playing Djokovic tomorrow on center court. So was talking with Bobby a little bit before Wimbledon. We'll see maybe if he thinks he can go out there and have a chance tomorrow rather than just going out there and having a little fun on the court, Lisa.
Sure. I mean, that'll be interesting. He's a local East Cobb boy, so we're rooting for him.
And Marty, I know you're always keeping tabs on the USA women, and they've been coming on fairly strongly here so far in 2013. A few good showings so far. Of course, Serena and Sloane Stephens, looks like she's bouncing back a little bit here this summer. I know you keep close tabs on the women, and what do you think so far?
I think that they're doing, or they're making great progress. We got the number one player in Serena, and then with Madison Keys and Sloane Stephens, we've got really young players that look like they can hang and be around for a long time. And even the college players that are getting in on the action, like Mallory Burdett. Since we talked about her, she's having a great rookie season, I would say. She's in a rare category of people who go to college and make somewhat of an impact on the pro tour. So she's to be congratulated on that for sure.
That's always a good sign. And Jamie Hampton is
absolutely
meteoric rise up the ranking. So she went down early with a kind of a bad draw at Wimbledon, but I think things bode well for her the rest of the summer.
Agreed. I saw her at Indian Wells, and she's a really tough competitor.
And Lisa, I know you you watch the guys a lot, and as well as the U.S. women have been doing, the U.S. men have kind of laid an egg a little bit. So Well, whether it be injuries or bad draws or just people maybe not living up to their expectations, it's been a little disappointing.
It has been, and let me just go on record as saying I'm really thrilled that I got to see the matches I saw at the French, because if I had waited and gone to Wimbledon, I wouldn't have gotten to see those players play. I mean, it's a crazy couple days we've had here.
It really is, and you don't have to go all the way to Paris to see those players play, Lisa. You can just go to Cincinnati in August, and everybody's there. So it's, and I know Cincinnati doesn't have maybe all the culture of a Paris type thing.
But, do they have foie gras there? That's all I need to know.
I'm sure there's a French restaurant somewhere in Cincinnati where you get some faux foie gras, probably. So, we got those tournaments to look to the rest of the summer, because the tennis tour will be heading here to the United States right after Wimbledon and Newport, and then all the hardcore tournaments start here in Atlanta. So that's gonna be a busy summer. Let's hope we have some players, Marty, that are healthy for the summer.
I hope that they're healthy. I think that it's a pivotal year for many of these men.
Yep.
That are on the tour this year. I got an opinion about several of these men. It's not a good opinion.
No, you have an opinion, Marty? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and I really think that most of the U.S. men need to be in assessment mode and really need to be asking themselves what they want out of the game. And I include Isner in there. I definitely include Ryan Harrison. Yep. I think these two young men have a long way to go to just stay on the tour, and it amounts to their game. It doesn't amount to their desire. It doesn't amount to their it amounts to their game and the lack of their ability to do certain things against top men around the world, especially return the ball. We were sold about both Isner and Ryan Harrison that they had powerful games and that was their calling card. But even if they hold serve, they cannot break serve. And this is a serious question for these two young men. And them as the examples for us, the other men are going to have to see that you're going to have to play both sides of the ball and you have to get points started. If you're going to hold your serve, you're going to have to find a way to break. Otherwise, you get into these wars and you wear your body out and you don't win enough matches to make an impact. I'm pretty harsh on the men, but that's what I've been seeing.
You bring up a good point. Isner has suffered a lot of wear and tear, I think, on his body. They're at maybe two different stages in their careers. Isner's actually, you know, played college and he had a few good years. He's had some big wins, beating all the top players in various events. And Ryan Harrison really hasn't beaten anybody yet of any consequence. So, Lisa, what are your takes on those two players?
Well, I'm coming at it with a prejudiced point of view, I have to say. I mean, John's, you know, our bulldog, and I'm a big fan of his. He's given so much to the sport, just in terms of his support of college tennis. And as a parent of a player who aspires to play in college, I'm just so thankful to John for being so outspoken about the benefits that he feels he gained from playing 4 years in college. And so I see him and I see him working hard. I think he's made a great impact on the sport. I think he's renewed hope for a lot of young players who maybe feel like they're going to need that extra time that college is going to provide them before going pro. And, you know, he's shown that's a viable path. Stevie Johnson's coming right up behind him doing the same thing. And so as a tennis parent, I'm really grateful to guys like that who have forged that path for the kids coming up behind him. In terms of Ryan, I grew up with Ryan's dad and have a connection to the family and have watched Ryan kind of go through the process developing from a really talented young kid. My dad loves to tell the story of when Ryan beat him when Ryan was 8 years old and he beat the you know what out of my dad, and my dad was just in utter shock that this little kid was beating him so badly. And so ever since then, we've kind of followed him, followed his progress from Shreveport to Texas to Florida. And, you know, I think he's making progress. I don't think it's necessarily as quick as people had hoped, or the pressure that maybe, you know, people were putting on him to follow in Andy Roddick's footsteps. But he's a talented kid, and he's certainly got a strong work ethic and strong family support behind him. So I think there's hope for him, and I think he's definitely one to keep an eye on.
Well, I think we have been keeping an eye on him, and I think you're right in saying the progress maybe is a little slower than what maybe the USTA development would have liked, and what he would have liked as well. So there's still time, I think, and I think maybe he needs a few breaks, and I think maybe once he gets that first big win, Marty, maybe that will give him the confidence to propel him. Sometimes players like him, I think, it's hard to get that first top 10, top 5 win. Maybe once they do, things turn around then for him.
I hope so. I hope that they're doing the type of assessment that they need to make the progress. You know, I'm talking purely about the game. I'm sure that they're upstanding young men.
Of course. And we're with Marty Kuntz and Lisa Stone here tonight on the Tech of Sports, and moving out of pro tennis a little bit. And Lisa, you mentioned talk about junior tennis and college tennis, and you kind of have a vested interest in junior and college tennis in the future. And you've been involved and spoken about, written about the USTA's new initiatives when it comes to junior tennis, you appeased at all or satisfied at all with what's been going on, or you think that there's still a long way to go with perfecting that?
Rick, are you talking to me? Because I lost you for a second there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm talking to you, Lisa. And just recapping real quick, you've written about and the USTA's initiatives about junior tennis and how they think they're trying to get more American juniors getting those college scholarships and that type of thing. And are you appeased a little bit, or you think that there's still a lot of work to do to perfect what's going on with that?
Oh, I think there's a ton of work to do. I'm not appeased at all. And, frustrated with, what's happening on the junior side, what's happening on the collegiate side. I think, you know, I would really like to see USTA pick up the ball here and run in terms of stepping up and making a statement, an affirmative statement about limiting foreign scholarships for college players, and, you know, really helping pave the way for these juniors who want to play college tennis. We're seeing college programs disappear right and left, and we hardly hear a word from USTA about that. And it's just, to me, it's disheartening. I feel like that's a role they need to step up and fill quickly.
And the USTA will answer you back saying they have enough stuff on their plate, and that's they kind of pass that to the NCAA and let them deal with that. So and the NCAA's got lots of issues and lots of changes underway too. And unfortunately, tennis ranks kind of toward the bottom of the changes they want to make. And they would prefer to speed tennis matches up probably to a 9-game pro set for every spot in the lineup and get those matches over in about an hour and 45 minutes. So,
well, they keep trying to do it, and thankfully they keep getting shut down. So, I mean, you can't mess with the tradition of the sport too much and maintain its integrity. And, you know, I really hope that USTA will devote at least a little more energy to fighting this battle on behalf of our kids. Because let's face it, for most junior players, college is going to be the end of their junior tennis career. Most of them are not going to go on to the pro circuit and have, you know, long-term success there. So why not pave the way for them to play in college and you know, help maintain those programs, help maintain spots for our American juniors so they have a way to get an education and continue developing in their sport?
I think some of this is a matter of the NCAA not wanting the USTA in their sphere of influence also. I mean, they're running a multi-multi-billion-dollar corporation, and I'm not sure that they're looking, that they have any reason to give any sway or say to another multi-billion dollar corporation. Also, they, I think that there's a barrier. I just don't think that they can influence or tell the NCAA or schools how to do it. Also, I don't think the coaches want the USTA involved. I mean, the coaches have enough of their own issues with the USTA. If the USTA goes on a lobbying campaign about foreign players, then, you know, I'm not sure that Manny Diaz, for example, would appreciate that. Or Billy Martin, who visited out here in California with the kids at my son's academy. And he's very adamant that they're going to continue to recruit foreign players. The top teams are only the top NCAA teams in terms of scholarships. Billy Martin said they're only looking at players with a top 10 stats in America. So they're not, I mean, of the 98,000 kids play junior tennis, Billy Martin's looking at his fingers at who he's willing to allow play on his team at UCLA. And they had at least, three guys from other countries. I don't think they were all on scholarship, and they may not have all been on scholarship, but they definitely are recruiting foreign students. I think there should be restrictions. When you're, like Lisa said, you're getting rid of program, or the colleges are getting rid of programs because tennis is a non-revenue sport. But at the same time, they're according scholarships to students that for the balance of their life did not contribute to American tennis. But they're coming here and they're receiving the benefit of the structure that's built by people who play tennis as children, went to college, helped establish college programs here that now have histories that coaches want to continue, but they continue them with, you know, quarter of the team being foreign students. I think there should be something done about that. I think it may have to be persuasive more than anything. The college tennis thing is a tough issue.
Go ahead, Lisa.
One of the pieces of fallout that I've heard discussed about having so many non-American players on the teams is it's hard to build a fan base in your local college town when the player isn't a name that's known locally. The player's family isn't there. The player's friends, you know, their childhood friends aren't there to come out and cheer. And so it impacts the number of fans that show up for these matches. It impacts the excitement around the teams and their matches. I mean, you bring up Manny. Manny Diaz does an amazing job in Athens at getting crowds out to those matches. And, you know, all kudos to him and his team, his management team, his coaching team, for promoting the sport of tennis at University of Georgia. But not every coach, not every coach's staff has the ability to do what the University of Georgia has been able to do in terms of generating excitement, bringing people out match after match after match. I mean, the stands are packed at Georgia, and, you know, that's awesome. I know there are other programs around the country who have similar types of fan bases, but not every school does. And again, what I've heard some coaches mention is, you know, it's tough to generate a fan base when your players are from thousands and thousands of miles away.
They have to stop recruiting those players then. They have to choose. They either want the what they regard as talented international player on their team, or they want to find the best players in their region that can contribute to, you know, building a local support for the college tennis team. It seems like they're going to have to make a choice.
As someone that knows college coaches, Marty, and talks to them regularly, they'll tell you that all things being equal, they would love to have the player be an American, but it goes back to kind of maybe junior tennis here in the United States. They will tell you the American player, junior players are spoiled. They have a sense of entitlement. And when they go to college, the parents are involved. The parents try getting involved. They don't have those issues when they recruit somebody from Brazil or Slovenia or France. And those players are coming over and they have no other choice but to, they wouldn't be here without that scholarship. So the college coaches say those foreign players will run through a wall for them, where the American players will whine and mope, and so that's why they will all, and they feel the foreign player, international players have a bigger upside, so that's why they're, especially mid-major schools that aren't getting, have no chance of getting the top Americans, they're 80% international players on the team because of that.
I think on balance that is a poor excuse, right? Because you could continuously make that excuse rather than start investing time in letting up and coming and top juniors know that tennis isn't as dainty or as clean or as mellow as they think, and that it takes a lot of gritty hard work. That I'll give you an example.
Whose job is that? The USTA's or the parents' job of the kids coming up?
No, this is college coaches' job.
The college coaches get them already when they're 18, 19.
But they're telling you they want Americans on the team, but the Americans have these deficiencies or these
and the ones that go with the ones
that don't have to deal with foreign players. I'm telling that these college coaches are not communicating with junior coaches or junior players about the attitudes and the sort of character that you have to have in order to play college tennis, right?
I agree. They're communicating all the time. There are tons of articles and interviews available. The college coaches have been saying this for years, and it's not one issue. It's a problem of the parents, and I'm a guilty party. It's a problem of our junior coaches. It's a problem of our juniors themselves. And then they get to that place where the college coaches see, I mean, these coaches go to the junior tournaments. They see what these kids are doing to prepare before a match, to how they behave on the court, how they treat the tournament officials, how they treat the tournament staff, what they do post-match in terms of stretching and taking care of their bodies. They see all that. We're failing our kids as parents and junior coaches, in my opinion, preparing them for that type of situation. I think our kids are soft, not because of entitlement, but because my generation of parents, and I'll take ownership of this, we've always been so concerned about self-esteem and, oh, we don't want to hurt little Johnny's feelings and make him feel bad because he didn't win today. Let's give him a trophy just for participating. Come on. I mean, we got to move past this as a society. And I don't think the responsibility lies solely with the college coaches. It doesn't lie solely with the parents or the junior coaches. It's a group effort. We've all got to work together to make this kind of societal shift to get our kids tougher and ready to compete internationally.
I'm having lunch with a Division I coach tomorrow, Marty, and he coached at an ACC. He was a head coach at an ACC school, and he'll tell me he got fired from that job because the athletic director said you have to have 80% of the people American on the team, and he couldn't get the American players to cut it. So now that he's been at a couple mid-major programs, he's gone 80% international, and he's got winning records, coach of the year honors, and NCAA appearances because of it.
Those facts or that evidence seems pretty self-evident. Let's bifurcate this. We don't have the same issue with college women that we do with the college men. The issue parallels and tracks the same issue that America has with regard to developing its most talented juniors and players into professionals. We find that the women or the young ladies are able to matriculate from the junior tennis system or the ITF system as it exists here in America into the pros much more successfully than the young men. Now we're finding that you have more ladies or women that are able to transition from junior tennis in America to college tennis in America. And you have less men that are able to do so. Clearly, we have an issue with how the boys or the young men are developing their tennis before it's time to go to college. I don't know if that's a matter of they don't play enough tennis. they may not play enough varieties of tennis or be exposed to how the rest of the world is playing the game. And so they get into sort of an American hard court baseline regimen, and they don't get the value of how young men are playing the game all over the world. And then when they have to compete with them for college scholarships, they're falling short.
Well, so, wait a minute. There are 8 college scholarships for women and 4.5 for men. You don't think that's a huge piece of the puzzle here?
No, not in terms of the quality of tennis play, because even if you made it equal, you would have the same type of players, just double on the college team. Whereas
I disagree, because what's happening is a coach is having to divide up 4.5 scholarships on the men's side between a roster of, let's say, 12 players. It's easier to lure a player from another country to the U.S. to get a college education with a partial scholarship than it is to get an American kid to accept a partial scholarship and play college tennis. And so what my experience has been is I'm seeing these boys either foregoing playing college tennis altogether because they're not going to be able to play on a team at a school that academically they want to be at so that they get the type of education they want, or they can settle for a lesser academically rigorous school and get more money and play. A lot of them are choosing, you know, the former rather than the latter. And
depends on what's important to them.
Yes, right. That's a matter of choice. That goes a little bit beyond tennis. I would say that tennis worked out for them because it created their ability to make those sorts of choices. Whereas a lot of people, you're talking about, a lot of people just don't have an opportunity to weigh those kind of choices about how to pursue the next phase in life. These kids played tennis, got good, got recognition, and now are weighing choices that they otherwise wouldn't even be able to weigh. Despite the fact that for the boys, yes, we know the Title IX is impacting the sheer numbers that get the college scholarship opportunities.
Let's just take a quick break here, you guys, before we get to one more topic. And the show is brought to you by Amazon.com here. And you can use the affiliate link at the studio, netcaststudio.com/Amazon, for all your needs. No extra cost to you, and it helps support the programming and the studio here. So netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And that holds true for anything you buy on Amazon, whether it be books, music, gifts, anything like that. So once again, netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And guys, I think we could talk about this all day long and not accomplish anything, because it's going to take multiple parties working together to get that to change and society probably to change a little bit. So maybe we're a generation or two away from maybe this swinging back to what it was maybe in the 70s and through the mid 80s before Title IX and before a lot of other things took place. So we'll hold off on that talk for another show. And just as we wrap up here with two more topics, and I guess kind of building on what we were talking about, Marty, what do you think we're not doing here in the States that other countries are doing that all of a sudden have started developing players en masse?
Oh, I don't think it's any one thing, but if I had to say the one thing is that the other countries are doing a good job in everybody playing each other and finding more level-based play. And I think that we here in America are starting to respect the world game now. So whereas we had a lock on all the experts in tennis for decades, and the most prominent people who discussed tennis and people understood about tennis were Americans, we're starting to look a little bit outward. And we know now that there are people all around the world that have tremendous insight on this game. So we're starting to borrow some of those things. And I believe that the universal rated tennis is one thing that we're beginning to implement. I know it's full on happening here in Northern California as a follow up to the changes in junior competition. We just had our generation gap where NorCal put together the best juniors. Everybody didn't get to play. They chose the best juniors, boys and girls, and they played against NorCal legends, the Paul Goldsteins of the world, the Jeff Greenwalds of the world, and a lot of the champion ladies of the region in college and open play. And they had a big competition, and the adults won. But I'm sure those juniors got better that weekend.
Absolutely.
And it didn't have anything to do with line calls, refs, scheduling. It was just about tennis. And more of these types of events and opportunities for level-based play are going to get juniors with better games and better disposition.
Absolutely. And Lisa, I know that I'm sure on your computer, tennisrecruiting.net is bookmarked on there. And that's kind of a high tech now recruiting, a college recruiting tennis site. You think a site like that is good because it uses technology to kind of give a numerical ranking that you don't, that updates regularly that you maybe wouldn't get from the USTA? Or is that kind of have some negatives because it's discouraging to some people that maybe don't see where they're ranked and they don't see them rising maybe what they should. How do you feel about a site like that?
I love tennis recruiting because it takes into account wins and losses. It doesn't just take into account how far you got in a tournament, points per round, like the USTA ranking does. And there's a place for both. I think, USTA updates their rankings every week, too, so you can look online and know exactly where you are in your state, in your section, in the country, on USTA. But then what's so unique about tennis recruiting is it's done by high school graduation date. So you're ranked alongside the kids that you'll be graduating with and hopefully going through the recruiting process with. So you know where you stand among your immediate peers. And I to me, that's very valuable information to have. It's information that sometimes is frustrating because, you know, you might not play a tournament for a couple weeks and some of your peers have played and had some good results. And so you see your ranking drop as a result of that. But it's life, you know. And on the one hand, it would be nice to go back to the good old days where you saw your ranking at the end of the year when it came out in the yearbook. I kind of liked that, but the world has changed in terms of junior tennis, and I don't think we'll ever go back to that. And, you know, in terms of these kids who are looking to play in college, I think tennis recruiting is a very valuable tool, not just because of their rankings, but they provide some incredible information, interviews with coaches. They evaluate the incoming classes of all of the colleges, so you can kind of look at where you are and look at the incoming recruiting class and help determine which schools you should be looking at, which ones will be appropriate for you, where you'll get to play. And I think all of that is really helpful, especially as the kids are getting into the latter part of their high school years.
Yeah, I think it's a wealth of information, and then we're wrapping up here with Marty Collins.
They're becoming tennis's big data on the junior side.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Marty Collins and Lisa Stone. And Marty, you're a wealth of information on Twitter and Facebook. How can people follow you, or if they want to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Oh, yeah, the best. Okay, there are two ways now. I'm becoming an acolyte of Google Plus. So Google Plus me at Martin Collins. That's MARTYN. Martin Collins at Google Plus. You'll find a lot of me over there now, and I just love the functionality. And with Glass, I gotta be over there now. And you can always find me on Twitter at Martennis. That's MARTENNIS, Martennis. That's where I do my thing. I keep saying I'm gonna come up with a long form blog, but I think that long form blog is gonna be on Google Plus.
Okay, I think you're better in short bursts, anyways, Marty.
I think so too.
And Lisa, you're everywhere as well. How can people follow you and get in contact with you?
My blog is parentingaces.com. You can follow me at Parenting Aces on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/parentingaces. So and on Google Plus as well. So I hope people will follow along. I'm basically just sharing my tennis journey with my own kid in hopes of helping other people avoid some of the pitfalls that we've fallen into.
Absolutely. And I always ask my guests one last question here as we wrap up. And Marty, I know probably what your answer is going to be right now. What's the one gadget you can't live without right now?
glass.
Can't live without it now, huh?
Can't live without it now.
And it looks good on you, too.
Thank you very much.
You're a handsome man. That's even helped you even more, I think.
Yeah, it brings a little symmetry.
There you go. And Lisa, what's the one gadget you can't live without? I think I see you on your smartphone all the time.
Yeah, my iPhone. I'm a late comer to the game, but now that I'm in, I am in knee deep and couldn't live without it for sure.
That's the great thing. We all have technology helping us do our thing and getting through life, and a lot of technology in tennis and following tennis and then that type of thing too. So Marty and Lisa, thanks for coming on tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rick.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate being here.
No problem. And just want to let everyone know they can check out the show notes at netcaststudio.com for any of the information that Marty and Lisa talked about. And Netcast Studio has a bunch of other shows which may be of interest to you. And again, netcaststudio.com, check out all that. And the podcast directory that's put up by the people at Netcast Studio, that's Two Thumbs Up Media. You can search on there for different podcasts and shows which may be of interest to you. So that's twothumbsupmedia.com. Thanks for listening and joining in, everyone. This has been the 51st episode of the Tech from Sports, a Netcast Studio production.